Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, and the indispensable Joe Sheehan subscription newsletter. Joe, how are you?
Buried in spreadsheets, Dan. I finished up the third thirds, and behind the scenes at the newsletter, there's a lot of tracking that has to be done, subscribers and such. The bigger we get, the more there is. So I hope there were no big stories in baseball in the last 24 hours.
No, but it's good news. I'm glad to hear, for those of us who like the newsletter, that it sounds like with all that work, it must be very healthy right now.
It is good. It just feels like college again when you would let all the work, well, I would let all the work last until, you know, December 8th and then be like, oh, I have to do a semester's worth of work in 4 days.
Yeah, that's right about how I did it. I stopped drinking for about 12 hours to get all that work done and then got right back into it, though. So I don't know if that's your prescription, too.
I start drinking.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I'm looking at, we were talking about this earlier. Obviously, there's some Joe Madden news and some comments to get to here. But as for the Cubs and their bullpen, they have two pitchers in the bullpen who were on the roster opening day. That's Pedro Strop and, oh gosh, Tyler Chatwood, who was technically in the bullpen and kind of a swing guy.
Cishek was there too, right?
Cishek was, but he's on the injured list right now, so that's another guy down. Where does that rank in terms of managing through a season? And I mean that from Joe's perspective for you.
Anytime a manager has to dig that deep into, you know, when you're starting to talk about using 25, 30 pitchers and you're a contender, obviously bad teams will do this all the time. Not counting position players, I've got them at 28 pitchers, 27. Wow, they've used a lot of position players.
Yep.
27 pitchers used. That's really hard for a contender. Not even so much that you want to lock guys into roles, but when you're talking about using the 16th, 17th relievers on your depth chart, where you're talking about in-season bringing in guys and trying to figure out what they have and what their roles are going to be. We've talked a lot of attention on what Aaron Boone has done this year, managing through all of those injuries and getting performances out of guys like Urshela and Maben. I think about Dave Roberts a couple of years ago when his starting rotation was pretty much down to Kenta Maeda and four guys off of, you know, out of Albuquerque. I would put Madden's work with the bullpen this year. And again, I've criticized the way the bullpen's built and what he's done, but I think you have to give him a bit of a pass because he doesn't have the seven guys he left camp with in April.
Nicholas Castellanos is slashing in his 49 Cubs plate appearances at a clip of .370, .408, .761. I heard Len Casper on these airwaves earlier. He was digging into some StatCast data, Joe, and he noted that Castellanos was only batting .700 on barrels. You should bat around .800 on barrels, and a lot of that was attributable to Comerica Park. So his complaints were well merited. He is barreling the ball, and now all of a sudden we are seeing the power. Is that sort of a facile way of looking at it, or getting him out of that park hasn't made that much of a difference?
Well, Len's not that bright, so I wouldn't expect that. No. In the sample of barrels, which for a full-time player, like I'm going to guess, is probably like for Castellanos so far this year, probably maybe 50 or 60. That's a pretty small sample. So the difference between hitting 700 and 800 really isn't much. You can blame it on the park. You just blame it on, you know, the balls, finding the right guys and being positioned well. But I do think we're seeing Castellanos is somebody who gets the bat to the ball, hits it hard. The problem with him has generally been a lack of home run power. And that's just not the guy, that type of hitter he is. And, of course, the defense, which is better this year than it's been in past years. Is he a true talent 370 hitter? No, but I think if you look at his peak seasons in Detroit, which were generally 290 to 310, a handful of walks, you know, enough walks to be like an Adam Jones type guy, maybe a little more than that. And then, you know, real doubles power with, you know, 20 to 25 homers. Nobody's a true talent 370 hitter. But, I mean, Castellanos was a really good pickup. It was the perfect trade downline pickup in that he upgraded the offense. He didn't cost a whole lot because he's a rental, and you had a spot for him. It squeezed a few guys on playing time, including, you know, the sainted Albert Almora. But it's really, I loved the Cubs deadline, and you can love a team's deadline and have the player tank for 2 weeks and still be good moves. This is one of those cases where the move actually fits the performance after the deadline.
Joe, there is a fairly large, or at least larger than I would think it should be, Cubs fandom segment that looks at Chris Bryant and sees a lack of clutch, whatever that's worth. They see a guy that's not going to be here in 2 years. They could be right on that. And they see a guy that they'd rather move on for assets they can control. It is amazing to me. It is crazy to me. And I wonder if this season will do enough to dispel some of those opinions about one of the best guys playing third in baseball.
I think there are a couple of separate conversations that we're having there.
Mm-hmm.
One is Bryant clutch, and that's silly. I had somebody came at me about this on Twitter the other day, and I looked it up, and win probability added over leverage index, essentially it's a measure of clutch performance. It's a nerdy way of doing it. Tom Tango is with MLB now came up with it. And Bryant was, I believe, sixth in the National League. So if we want to argue that he didn't get a hit with second and third and two outs 2 weeks ago, that's fine. But when you actually look at the collection of his performance this year, he's certainly not unclutch. We can debate the merits of WPALI, which is a horribly named statistic, but we're stuck with it. But there's no evidence this year that Chris Bryant isn't clutch. I think it's a separate conversation as to whether you want to lock him up for the rest of his career. If you look at it, he's not a free agent until after 2021. His 2022 season, he'll be, I can do math, 30 years old.
Yes.
So if you're talking about extending him, you're buying into that period of time, that period of a career, where we know now that you want to run away from guys. It feels like, and my theory is that it's because of the velocity in the game and how hard, much harder pitchers throw. But I mean, older players, particularly guys 35 and beyond, are basically being pushed out of the game. There are occasional exceptions like Nelson Cruz, but last year there were, I believe it was 15 players, 32 and older, who had 3-win seasons. 15 players across the entire league, 32 and older. And you're basically buying in, because you're not going to get Bryant. You're not going to be able to sign Bryant for 3 years and $65 million. You're going to have to give him a full-fledged second extension, a big deal. I don't know if I want to buy into any player short of Mike Trout for his 30s. So the fact that Bryant didn't reach the majors until he was 33, the fact that the Cubs held him back that extra week to buy the extra year, I don't know that I want to extend him. And then if you don't necessarily want to give him that 6-7 year deal, I think that it does become a question of keeping him versus trading him. Me, I think this is the Cubs window. I think if they keep trying to win in 2021 and it falls apart a little bit in 22, you've had an 8 year run with this particular core. But to me, extending Bryant, I don't know that I would really want any part of that.
Sure. Okay. So then what is, I get you there. Anybody over 30 is don't trust him, right? That's the old Woodstock thing.
Yeah.
But There is a different conversation of what is the next 2 years of Bryant worth to you if you're the Cubs versus, I don't know, someone else who's trying to win. You know, can you find in trade, I guess, is this segment of Cubs fan asking, can you find in trade the value of Chris Bryant's next two seasons?
Boy, that's interesting because we just don't see a whole lot of trades like this anymore, right?
Nope.
Most trades are future for present. Or selling off a contract or something like that. We don't usually see hey, let's make a baseball for baseball trade. I think Bryant, if you're saying what do the Cubs need more than anything else, is probably a true number one starter.
Sure, and he needs to be 26 or younger and on a whole bunch of years of control.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got to be Gerrit Cole 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Cole's a free agent this year. You sign Gerrit Cole, you keep Chris Bryant. That's the argument I would make. But yeah, that's what you're looking for out there. And I'm just kind of flipping through the mental Rolodex here. I don't know if I'd want Jacob DeGrom because he's on that big contract now. You're not going to get Scherzer, and Scherzer's 36. But I mean, with pitchers, the aging curve doesn't matter as much. Some of them break the curve anyway. But that's what you're talking about here. You're talking about a starting pitcher equivalent to Bryant, who's going to be about as expensive, going to be about as controlled 2 to 3 years. And basically, that's what you're looking to make, a baseball trade. One for one. Walker Buehler is outside that range. I don't think you can get Buehler for Bryant. Jack Flaherty, who's, I believe, in the recent run that he's had. I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about. Somebody who could maybe even grow into being a number one. I think it's a fascinating time. I'm kind of thinking through it here, guys. I know it's bad radio, but it's a fascinating idea, trading Chris Bryant at essentially his peak.
Did you think that the Cleveland Indians had this in them?
I never stopped picking them for the division, which is more me being stubborn than anything else. But I'm, when they were 11 and a half back, and not just that, but they looked terrible. They had 7 good players, only 2 of which were playing well. You know, Ramirez was terrible for 2 months. You know, Lindor was hurt and he came back. He played well. All of the starters were on the DL except Bieber. I got to say, I wasn't really seeing this coming. And the performance they gotten out of Zach Plesac, Shane Bieber, and Adam Plutko, at a point where it looked like their season was going to fall apart, kind of saved them a little bit. Terry Francona, guys, that's not the famous bullpen they had a couple of years ago. It's seven guys named Nick Goody. And, you know, they got Oliver Perez, who's 64, 65 years old or something. He's coming out of the bullpen for them. Francona has just done an amazing job putting together that bullpen. The offense wasn't good. They were using their backup starters, and it's the best bullpen in the American League. And that kind of bought them time for Clevinger to come back, for Ramirez to hit, for them to make these trades for Puig and Reyes. So, no, I would love to tell you that I did. I really had my doubts about the Indians' ability to win this division. Now I think they've almost got to be the favorite just because they're in a better health situation than the Twins are.
What's the other percentage then? If it's 70% or whatever, the Indians grabbing it, what percentage would you say the Twins kind of gave this away?
I don't know. I mean, they were 31-29 from the day they had an 11.5 game lead to Sunday. I don't really think you can blame a team for, you know, I don't really think they blow it if they play 505 ball for 60 games. This is really about the Indians playing 700 ball. You know, the Twins, Byron Buxton is their guy, man. They've got this massive split without him. They're above 700 when he starts, and they're under 500 when he doesn't start. And it's one of the problems in having a very fragile player as your best player, as your superstar.
Something I've been thinking about, too, every week it seems like we're learning the name of another 19 or 20-year-old, a rookie. Now it's Aristides Aquino.
Connor, he's still talking about baseball, right?
Who comes up? Somebody comes up against your team, like, who is this guy? Or whether, you know, Houston every week seems to have another kid who's amazing. And we just did it last year with Acuna and Albies. What is this going to reach a point where teams really begin over-promoting, where they end up like, oh, now it's our turn. Now this is just what you do. And now a guy who we've drafted who we think is great, who is destroying A-ball, we can just bring him up to the majors. At some point, there's going to be enough mistakes that people are going to reel it in a little bit, aren't they? I mean, and this is kind of in the context of Luis Robert, of when a team's like, well, this is the new thing. And if a guy's great and he's 18 or 19, you just bring him up to the majors. Is this going to keep happening?
Yeah, because those mistakes don't cost you anything. You can make a mistake in free agency that costs you $17 million a year, or you can make a mistake calling up a kid that costs you $8.75 an hour. It's much cheaper to make these mistakes. So I think we will continue to see these players come to the majors. And I don't know how many of them. I mean, some players are going to wash out in the major leagues. That's just the nature of the game. But because players are more prepared than ever to play in the majors at a young age, because the pipeline is just that good now, the way we develop players is just that good now. And that's the international amateurs, that's U.S. amateurs. Players are more prepared to be professional baseball players when they get signed than at any other point before. So therefore, and then teams are better once they get them in the organization to make them into better players. So we are going to see players reach the majors and be ready at these incredibly young ages. I don't see this change. Now, there's a floor. You're not going to see 14-year-olds striking out 12. Well, against the Tigers, maybe. But you're generally not going to see, you know, the guys that young play. But you're going to see this 19, 20, 21, 22. This is where the game is now. And it's one of the reasons, you know, I've been on the, not to change the subject, but I've been on the pedal hard for the MLBPA to say, hey, we've got to have a much higher minimum salary, because this is where all of the value is being created.
Absolutely, 1,000% with you there. I wonder, though, if the idea that the development curve has completely changed with these 19 and 20-year-olds, though, does that blow out of the water the old adage that we brought the kid up too quickly and it torched his development, the old, the old Gordon Beckham thing?
I don't think you can screw up a kid by bringing him up too early if you make that decision quickly. Where I think you can screw up a kid is the Willie Green way, where you bring him up and you send him down, and you bring him up and you send him down. The Pirates have done this year with Mitch Keller. The Pirates brought up Mitch Keller not because they thought Mitch Keller was ready, but because they needed somebody to start on a Tuesday, or it was a Monday night in Cincinnati. And he got rocked and they sent him down. And they called him up because they needed somebody to start on a Thursday afternoon in Pittsburgh. And then they sent him down. I think it's the up and down that can really mess up a guy. I think you can also mess up a guy by leaving him in the minors too long. I think you make the argument, I can make the argument that the Blue Jays did that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He was ready to be in the major leagues a year ago, and they waited until this, you know, almost May to bring him up. But he was hurt in the spring. So those are the ways you can screw guys up. But I don't think pushing a guy to the highest level And seeing him fail there is necessarily a problem as long as you handle that failure as an organization properly.
People may not know this because it's not often discussed, but Hyunjin Ryu of the Dodgers has a 1.45 ERA. He's allowed zero or one earned run in 15 of his last 17 outings. Now, I didn't know this until I read this today, that right now the lowest ERA by any qualified starter since 1969, that was the year of the lowering of the mound, belongs
1.53.
to... 1.53. 1.53 by Dwight Gooden of the 1985 Mets. What are we seeing here? What's the significance of what Ryu is doing?
I was a 14-year-old Yankee fan in New York. You think I don't remember 1985? I could.
Well, that was the year that I was watching Carlton Fisk hit 37 home runs for the White Sox and Bob James saving over 30 games.
You know, Ryu is doing it in a way that we're just not, I mean, he's not somebody who's overpowering. We're used to guys coming up and everybody throws 97 with ridiculous breaking stuff. And, you know, Ryu has a fairly normal fastball for a left-hander. He's got this incredible command. He's got a great change. It's just all working for him this year. If you watch him pitch, guys, it's surgical. You know, Dwight Gooden mentioned in 53, you know who has the lowest ERA since then?
The lowest ERA.
You have to get this in Chicago. You just have to.
It's not Arrieta.
Maddox. Maddox in 94, 95, one of those 2 years that he was amazing. He had an ERA about 1.6.
So Pedro didn't have it.
Pedro 99, no. Yeah.
Because remember, Pedro 99, 2000, it looks great in ERA plus in the adjusted numbers, but it was 99 in 2000. The actual ERA, I think, was 1.7. Mm. But yeah, you look at, and Ryu is closer to Maddox in terms of this is a command and a four-pitch guy in location. He's not as overwhelming as Pedro is. And it's really fun to watch. And I'll be honest with you, he had a bad outing in Colorado. We were building two. And I kind of lost track of his numbers. And to look back, basically since that outing, he's gone back to not allowing any runs. It's basically he's had one bad start in a year. It's really something to watch. I knew, you know, the best pitcher in baseball would be a left-handed starter for the Dodgers. I just had the wrong one. So, no, it's a fantastic story. It's just another reason, you know, that Dodger team, and again, it's the West Coast. They play most of their games at 10 o'clock at night. They've been on our radar for 3 or 4 years now, so we kind of lose track of them a little bit. Like, we almost take them for granted. But Ryu is having not just a great year, but it's a great year that guys like us aren't talking about enough.
So, Joe, since you finished the thirds, as we let you go and the Cubs play the Phillies, who we haven't seen in a little while, or if you've been just watching Cubs baseball, a little snapshot, if you would, a 60-second snapshot on what you see from the Philadelphia Phillies.
They've been wrecked by injuries. You talk about bullpens being wiped out. Hector Neris, I think, is the only healthy reliever, maybe him and Adam Morgan from the start of the year. They've also had injuries to McCutcheon, to Jay Bruce. Otabel Herrera, who's supposed to be their center fielder, has been suspended for an incident in Atlantic City with his girlfriend. It's just been one of those years where everything's gone wrong. You know, Bryce Harper has had, I wouldn't call it a bad year. It's going to end up being a 2-3 win year, but it's not the MVP caliber year that I thought he would have at 26 and kind of raise up the Phillies. Arrieta has been hurt. He's been pitching through a bum elbow that, frankly, guys, I think we're going to find out after the year that Arrieta should have been shut down in May, mm-hmm. and he's been pitching through this. And I don't mean that in a Phillies are wrong sense. I mean that the Arrieta has tried to pitch through this sense. But he's like a 70-pitch starter at this point. He really sunsets middle of the game. He's trying to gut his way through it because he knows that this team doesn't have the pitching depth to get by. So it's been a tough year for the Phillies. They were pretty quiet at the deadline. They went out and got Corey Dickerson. But they weren't in position to go out and make a lot of big moves. They're also, their farm system is starting to thin out a little bit. They got a third baseman, Alec Baum. You'll see him next year. Just a rough year. They invested a lot in this season. But here's the thing. They invested a lot in not just this season. Like, they didn't go all in for 2019. They went all in for 19, 20, 21. So the fact that they're going to win 78 games this year amidst a million injuries doesn't necessarily mean they blew it. I think they'll bounce back in 2020 with better health, with, you know, Baum possibly coming up, maybe trading off, kind of aligning the talent a little bit better. But right now, they're, you know, a 500-ish team with a lot of injuries.
Sounds like a good reason to fire the hitting coach and replace him with Charlie Manuel.
Wow. Kiki Kaplow's got to love that, right?
Yeah, that's you. Well, usually that's the deflector shield being shot right off before the spaceship is destroyed, right?
We're not nerds.
No, anything but. Joe, thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Joe Sheehan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.